How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is September 6, 2011 here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Hope everybody had a good Labor Day. We'll talk about the Labor Day edition of Raw here in a bit. Not exactly the most newsworthy show in the world, but there was some stuff to talk about. But a lot of other stuff to get into first as far as news, starting with the official announcement that UFC is going to be returning to Japan for the first time in over a decade. February 26th, Saitama Super Arena. And looks like it's going to be airing at 10 a.m. in Japan, or it's going to be taking place at 10 a.m. in Japan. So it will air at the normal time in North America on pay-per-view. And Dave, thoughts on this move?
It's kind of been known for a long time they wanted to do a show in Japan. I mean, the one thing that I've gotten a lot of questions about already has to do with Australia. And, because that's the weekend that they usually run Sydney. And they are planning on running Sydney towards the middle, if not later in the year. There was actually talk of running the November 5th show that ended up in Birmingham, England, in Sydney, Australia. And the difference, the main thing reason why it didn't happen that way is because that, as it turned out, I mean, it's one of the last shows on Spike, and the Spike people who are based in New York for the most part, the idea of flying to Birmingham, England, it's from New York, is not that bad of a flight. Sydney, Australia, from New York is a disaster of a flight. It's just unbelievable. It's 20 hours or something like that, probably more. So there was that issue, and then the other issue is now, and they didn't know this at the time when they scheduled Birmingham, England, and also they hadn't run an England show in a long, long time. They wanted to get back into the UK market, but the other issue is now that they're running October 29th and November 12th. The idea of running November 5th in Australia with that ridiculous flight and all the time it takes to get there, it would absolutely just destroy the staff that has to go to Vegas and then go to Sydney and then have another show in Anaheim the very next week. So it all worked out for the best, even though it's still you're still doing Las Vegas to Birmingham, England to Anaheim. Three straight Saturday nights, so it's not like it's easy either way. But they may, if they can get, right now, Melbourne, Australia has a law that, you'll get a kick out of this. The sports minister in Melbourne is not opposed to mixed martial arts, but he hates cage fighting. So mixed martial arts is legal, but cage fighting is illegal. So they're trying to get that law changed to where cage fighting is legal.
So you could have mixed martial arts in a ring.
Exactly. So they just had a show there on Saturday night in Melbourne. But right now they can't run there. I mean, Melbourne is going to be like a Toronto almost. At least that's one of their thoughts. So, if they can get into Melbourne, the next Australia show would be Melbourne, but if not, they'll go back to Sydney most likely. I don't see them going to another city in Australia just because of the population and everything like that, and also then being too far from Melbourne. And Melbourne's really the hub. So that's the story there. And as far as Japan, Japan's going to be a tough market for them, but probably not for the first show. I think the first show will do great. It's kind of like when WWE first went to Japan. The first couple of times they were on fire, and now, they do okay. They don't run it that much, and it's not a big deal. But when they first started going, they were not first in the 90s, but the first time in this run, so to speak. And UFC, having been out of the country for so long, going back, it wasn't even Zuffa at the time, and it was not that big of a deal. The UFC going in. The first UFC will be a huge success, and then after that, we'll see. But the plan is to run one UFC a year in Japan, and they had the press conference actually on Tuesday, and they had all the Japanese fighters: Kid Yamamoto, Tae Mizugaki, Yushin Okami, Yoshihiro Akiyama. They were all there, and they basically said that they hope to announce a card in November. And all the Japanese fighters wanted to be on the card. And they had a video message from Dana, so Dana didn't go to the press conference. And that's the deal.
Something kind of funny when you said they're going to announce a card in November. Just nowadays, I don't know what that means, really.
Well, I mean,
I know they have to. It's just kind of like, at this point,
that's about the lead time that you want, really, yeah. is about 3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, you certainly can't announce anything now because you've got, between now and November 19th, hold on, between now and November 19th, there's so many shows with every single fighter practically on the roster, so, you don't know who's up and who's down, and you know what I mean? You can't even hint at what you're going to do. Who knows what's going to happen in February? Who's going to be champions, anything?
Well, I'm just saying, and we'll talk about this in a second.
You know, I mean, it's like, whoever's not injured at that point is going to be on the card, especially if you're Japanese and not injured, then you'll be on
well,
the card.
Well, sure, but then you've got to last another 3 months and not get injured again, which to me is the big concern.
Well, but that's always the case. That's always going to be the case. They're always going to have a card 3 months out, and there's always going to be, your usual 2 to 10 pullouts.
Which,
it's funny because the other day when we were going through the whole thing, and I was talking with somebody there, and it was like, everything's cool. As long as there's no more injuries. And then it's like, yeah, there's going to be 4 injuries on every one of these cards. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the average for this year. So, some will have less and some will have more, but you got to count on it. And it's like, how are you going to fill? And here we are. Diego Sanchez breaks his hand today. So
yep.
That's number one of the ones for September 24th. So that's a couple weeks away. And they actually had 2 undercard injuries for September 17th. So they're happening, They're not. They haven't been as big a name as Diego's, the first major name, and they're looking for an opponent for Matt Hughes right now. And Josh Koscheck has agreed. And as far as I know, I don't know that Matt Hughes has agreed to face Josh Koscheck. But with so much little time left, I think there's gonna be a lot of pressure on him to do one for the team.
I don't want to curse anybody or anything like that. But the Cain Dos Santos fight, I'm praying to God no one gets hurt.
Oh yeah, and I mean, let's face it. Cain's coming off of a serious shoulder surgery,
mm-hmm.
and torn rotator cuff. So just the idea of guys getting hurt.
Now wasn't it a case where he didn't even want to come back in November anyway? He wanted to wait till December. Was that they wanted October and he pushed it to November?
It wasn't really him so much as when he would be ready, but November. There was talk of October 8th, but when Edgar and Maynard were okay for October 8th, they kind of pushed Cain back because they knew that he probably could have gone October the 8th. It would have been pushing it too hard, and by that point they had November 19th scheduled for San Jose, and at that point, that's the fight you wanted for San Jose. It ended up being taken off San Jose because they felt that they needed it for Fox. But so yeah, it was. At one point, they were talking October 8th. Once they had they actually have 2 title fights because they got Aldo and Kenny Florian. So since they had 2 title fights for October 8th, they figured that they would wait for San Jose, especially since Cain would be have 6 more weeks of recovery time. Now he's got 5 more weeks of recovery time, from that date. But anyway, he never turned down the date or anything. They just realized November 19th would be best.
So what is the plan in terms of publicizing the Cain Junior Dos Santos match?
It's still all being worked out, but I think that they're going to do something along the lines of, the baddest man on the planet type of a thing. Like Mike Tyson used to be. Because let's face it, to the generation up until, Mike Tyson probably, the boxing heavyweight champion was like the baddest man on the planet deal. And everyone knows under the age of who knows what that, boxing is a limited skill and MMA is more encompassing and the baddest man on the planet. If they're, whatever that's supposed to mean, probably, is more in tune with who the MMA, the best heavyweight in MMA is. So I think that's what they're, the marketing is going to be like, you watch this thing to find out if Cain Velasquez or Junior Dos Santos is the baddest man on the planet, which I like that. I like that marketing because, we were talking about the whole heavyweight championship thing and what it means and what it doesn't mean. And if you really push the heavyweight champion as the baddest man on the planet type of a thing, it does bring back that luster to the heavyweight championship that, has been gone since, you know, realistically, Mike Tyson was champion. That's 1996, the last time when Tyson lost the championship, I think, for the last time. If that's correct, I don't even know.
Maybe that's, I think it's very important also not just to push the baddest
man. Right? I don't even remember now about Tyson. I mean, I know he lost to Buster Douglas in 1990, and then he was in prison.
Point is, it was a long time ago.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, I know the last time he challenged was probably Lennox Lewis. That was well after 96. Anyway, I don't have the year in my head right away. So
I think the important thing is not just pushing it as the baddest man on the planet, but pushing it as the fact that these are not only heavyweights, but here are some clips of Cain Velasquez destroying the gigantic Brock Lesnar in a very, very exciting one-round fight. You know, show some of the clips of these guys. I mean, these are not your big, slow, plodding heavyweights. You got a lot of great clips of these guys going nuts.
Well,
speed,
that's why you got
power.
You got that one-hour special on October 30th. That's what that's designed for.
But I mean, more than just that. I mean, listen, if you're going to be promoting this during football games and sporting events and that sort of thing, you can create an awesome 30-second commercial showing not that these guys are just heavy, but they're big, heavy, strong, fast, powerful, explosive dudes.
Absolutely, and I'm sure they will. I'm sure you're going to see. Believe me, I'm sure that the last couple of weeks before that fight on those football games, you're going to be seeing those commercials like crazy.
Now another, go ahead.
I don't have anything else to say.
Oh, okay. We also got to talk a little bit about some WWE news. Actually, it's just pro wrestling news in general. Kurt Angle's DWI. We talked about that yesterday on the show. His attorney, of course, has stated that Kurt is going to plead not guilty. And apparently Kurt on TMZ today was talking about how he believes he was framed. He took a breathalyzer, breathed clean. He was framed by the police. And not sure if this is the best defense in this situation.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still waiting to find out what TNA is going to do. And it doesn't. So far they haven't done anything publicly.
I was going to say, based on history, not much.
Yeah, that's true. Based on history, they not much, but it's too much of a pattern, and especially with Kurt, you know. Because I mean, if you think about it, with if you're Kurt Angle and you're an Olympic gold medalist, I mean, number one, you know. Because I was talking with somebody about this, like with Matt, when this was having to do with Matt Hardy, you know, getting pulled over twice within the span of a couple of weeks, and that's a lot quicker time for him than Kurt. But the point being is, of all the people in general...
Didn't he say four wrecks, by the way? Four times?
I don't know how many wrecks. I know he was pulled over twice, but I think it was multiple wrecks.
I could have sworn he said four wrecks in his latest video, but I could
did.
Be wrong.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that. Which
That's
is
bad,
really,
everybody. That's
what?
Bad.
But four wrecks is really bad. Yeah. That's more than scary. The second wreck, man, you should take stock of something, because that's scary as hell. But the... the thing is if you get the odds of driving drunk and being pulled over for driving drunk are minuscule. If you are a celebrity and you're doing that, it's even lower. I mean, like pulled over, yeah, but being given a pass, you know, if you're a celebrity, you're going to be getting a pass more often than not. So the idea that you're, you know, for everyone that we hear about, you know, there's probably dozens that we don't hear about that, you know, you slide by because no one catches you, or they pull you over and, you know, as long as you're somewhat... I mean, I guess with drunk driving, it's probably different than speeding now, you know, because with drunk driving, if you're really messed up and driving, they're going to have to take you in just out of safety. But if you're, like, borderline, they're going to, you know, if you're a celebrity, you're going to, you know, it's the benefits of being a celebrity. So the point being that for all this stuff we hear, it's you know, it's probably a lot worse than we hear and not better. And when you hear multiple times of a celebrity, it's something that's probably pretty scary. So I don't know. I hope someone takes action, but we shall see. You know, it's not just the company. I mean, he himself, you know, but the guys themselves when it comes to them. So especially a driven guy like Kurt, you know, you're just gonna fight your way through it and go, I got my matches that I got to do, and I don't know if he's convinced himself he's actually really training for the Olympics or not, or he's just, you know, thinking he's convincing people and he's not really convincing anyone. I don't know where his head's at there, and you know, but that's another issue.
Couple of WWE notes, some stuff from the television in the arena and some commercials and that sort of thing. They've announced that, I guess the way that they promote the Survivor Series, the return of The Rock, I guess there are people that heard the announcement and came to the conclusion that Rock was in fact going to be wrestling. They said he was going to be returning to the ring at the Survivor Series. And as of today, and this is actually one that I don't expect to change, but I suppose anything's possible, he's not going to be wrestling at Survivor Series. I'm sure he will get in the ring. I'm sure he'll do a Rock Bottom. I'm sure he'll do a People's Elbow. But I think that they'd really have to have lost it and freaked out about something to actually have him do a wrestling match at that show.
Very bad idea. I mean, they're looking at one of the biggest, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they do the biggest number that they've ever done at WrestleMania. But if he wrestles once, it takes the edge off. You know, the second match, I mean, it'll still be big, don't get me wrong. And I guess if, like, he's actually going to do a match of Survivor Series number will go way, way up. But I don't know. I mean, the thing is with the advertising, I mean, it's like it's misleading as hell, no question. But they didn't outright say he's going to be in a match. They just said he's returning to the ring. I mean, it's not like they're advertising. They're advertising a show in a couple of weeks in Kansas City, the dark match. They're advertising Cena versus Punk, belt versus belt, which obviously is probably a commercial that was cut months ago. And you know, I'm sure that when everything changed, you know, that they sent a new commercial and somehow it got lost in the shuffle. And like this played tonight, you know, when neither has the belt, and also, you know, pushing Rey Mysterio on the card when, you know, obviously Rey's not going to be there. So when it comes to WWE, although the Survivor Series ads obviously are new ads, they probably just, you know, did this week. But, it's kind of misleading. But, I'm sure he's for sure going to do something physical on the show. But I would be surprised if he is in a match. I guess they could put him in, like, an elimination match, but I think that would just be a
bad idea. Horrible idea.
Of course it would.
Horrible
idea. They were considering putting a Triple H in a match tonight.
I actually think they had
some ads out for that, too.
I actually think, to be honest with you, that putting him in a multi-man match would be even dumber than having him do a singles match.
I think it's just dumb either way, but you're probably right. It is actually dumber because it actually makes it like, you know.
He's a guy. He's just a guy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It makes him just one of the, you know, one of four guys on a team, even if he's the captain of the team.
Now, they also had a commercial that aired during Raw talking about, I guess they showed a bunch of footage from early days of WWF all the way up through today and said that in 2012, it starts again, and they pushed the WWE Network. And the impression I got is that there is concern about UFC starting a network, and they wanted to, jump the gun here or get the word out that they were going to do this, I guess, first, which is ironic because I don't think UFC is actually interested in doing it right now.
UFC is not going to do a network. Now they were, you know, they were gung ho for a long, long time, and when they had negotiated with the NBC deal was going to include doing a network. The Fox deal, the Fox people were not interested in them, you know, partnering with them on a network. So it just, you know, didn't happen with the new TV deal, and it's not going to happen anytime soon. I mean, they were, you know, they outright, both Lorenzo Fertitta and Dana White have just said, like, look, you know, our thing is promoting fights, not trying to, you know, do a television network. And I mean, there are people, they did a thing, and this is, you know, and Dana cited this like time after time, but Sports Business Journal interviewed a bunch of like major guys in the sports world, you know, including Mark Cuban and a few others, and they asked, like, can anyone in sports do a network, you know, besides the ones that are already out there? We've got the Golf Channel and the NFL Network, Major League Baseball Network, and it's like, can anyone do it and make it successful? And the feeling was is the only one who could was the UFC. Nobody said WWE, which is not to say that they're all right, but no one did. And so, you know, they had this idea and everything. The thing is again, the UFC is so much run, I mean, not that WWE isn't, but the UFC is so much run by really two people, which is Dana and Lorenzo. I mean, Joe Silva makes a lot of decisions too, but you know, when it comes to like a television network, I mean, you know, he'll be involved in things, but it's really those two. And the more they try to do, the more diluted their time at any one thing is. And starting a TV network is incredibly time consuming, and it's not like either of those guys got a lot of time. So I think that it would, could you do it and make money? Yeah, but there's risks of other things. And I mean, and it goes the same with Vince, because everything in WWE runs through Vince. And doing a TV network, especially because they, every week they change their mind on what they want in the network. One week it's like some wrestling, but original series is, and then it's like now it's kind of like the home for their movies, some original programming. At one point it was like, lots of stuff that has nothing to do with wrestling. Now I think that they want to do it more with, more stuff to do with wrestling. They want the WWE network. It would have WWE, wrestling matches, but, at one point they wanted it to be like just like a network, like, not like, I don't want to say like USA, because that's like a joke, but like a network with like real programs and things like that that included WWE, so they could be like, like a, they've had that thought, and they still may do that. I mean, the further they branch from wrestling, obviously the more chance it is that the stuff that is not wrestling is going to be crap, because look at their movies. I mean, as far as business and everything like that. They're very good at appealing to wrestling fans with wrestling. And historically, have they ever, has there ever been any long-term success with anything? Other than, you can say, yeah, the entrance music, CDs and albums and all that stuff, over the years has done well, but it's still wrestling stuff. It's off the wrestling television show. I mean, when they get away from wrestling, even wrestling themed, like the wrestling themed restaurant, the further away they get from wrestling, and when they're not in wrestling, they've been, almost universally unsuccessful. So, again, the further this network is not, and with not wrestling, the odds are greater of it not being a success. It's a tough time, They're pushing it. They don't have a start date, but this is the first time they publicly put like an ad on their television show. But I think most people, when you look at it, it doesn't look any different from how they used to advertise the 24/7 thing.
Well, it's a little different in the sense that they only on this commercial showed WWE footage. There was nothing from WCW or any other stuff that they air on the 24/7 network. I don't know if you can read too much into that, but that's the way they pushed it.
Yeah, I think I think the whole thing is like they'll have footage from other stuff just because they've got that library and they want to make use of those, all those libraries that they bought.
And if you have Classics on Demand, you're looking at the current Classics on Demand, there's, 20, 25, 30 hours a month. And if you're doing a 24-hour day, 7-day a week channel, you're going to have to go through your entire library and every library you've got.
Absolutely. I would presume the Classics on Demand vanishes when this thing starts, too.
Let's get going on Raw here. There's a lot to talk about. This was kind of a show where they knew that the rating wasn't going to be very well. It wasn't going to be very good. It was on Labor Day. Interesting because I believe it's next week football starts, correct?
Next Monday is the first football show, yes.
Oh, boy. Going to be insanity here for the next 3-4 months.
Yeah, I mean, if they do like a 3-0 next week, they should consider it a success.
I'm thinking next week's a 2-9 if they're, I don't want to say if they're lucky. I predict 2-9 next week. Maybe even a 2-8.
Yeah, I think, one of the things is they didn't, which I think is a big mistake, is they didn't plug anything for next week. Because they really need something, they need something to make it more than just it's Raw, to leave people with.
Well, it's super Raw.
Yeah, but they've already had 2 weeks of that, and it wasn't really so super tonight. Although, I don't think there's anything really wrong with the show other than I watched the Beth Phoenix Eve Torres match, and I think there was another match where the Kofi Kingston match.
Oh yes, Kali and Jinder, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as like everything else, it wasn't. What's the word I'm looking for? It wasn't like it was a bad show or anything, and I thought it was pretty easy to watch overall. But when the show was over, did they did you have this feeling that, man, I can't wait for next week's Raw, and you really needed that, you really needed to push that one this week, and there was nothing done there.
Well, God, when we talk about the end of the show, it's like, what are you going to get next week? Same thing you've got for the last 10 years. That's what they told us.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're saying.
John Cena ran through
everybody.
I mean,
yeah, the finish, that match was incredibly predictable. I mean, you could have, like, closed your eyes and gone, okay, there's, you know, Cena's team's going to be outmanned, and then Cena's going to be alone with a couple of guys, and then he's going to beat him because, you know, if you looked at that heel team, there ain't anyone on that heel team that they were going to, you know, have beat Cena. And you know, again, Cena's the one going for the championship. So, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with Cena going over. I mean, it's going to annoy people, but, you know, he's going for the championship.
I'll tell you why it annoyed me. Because, yes, Cena is going for the title, and like he's done 1,000 times thus far. But if the guy's going for the title, you know, have him win an 8-man when he pins a guy, as opposed to the elimination match here, where you've got a lot of guys. You know, as we mentioned a million times, there are a handful of guys on Raw that anybody cares about. And there's a huge number of people that nobody cares about, including SmackDown guys now. And so your main event is going to do an 8-man elimination match where you're going to beat 7 guys on one show. And the last man standing is John Cena, who's been the last man standing, quite frankly, for 10 years now.
Yeah. I thought that it was kind of silly when they did that 8-man and they said elimination. I go, like, you know, what is the upside of this? Other than then I thought, oh, they're going to, you know, make Cena the underdog and he's going to beat a bunch of people. So it was, I don't know, it was predictable. Yeah, do you need to beat all those guys? I mean, I wouldn't have made it an elimination match.
Did John Cena need to beat all those guys? I mean, maybe if like, let's just
say
that.
They don't give a shit about those guys. It's the, you know, one of the problems that they've had is that they have their certain, you know, core of guys, which is John Cena and Randy Orton and Triple H, and Punk is going to, you know, Punk is pretty close to that right now, that in their minds, you know, those are the guys we push and those are the guys we protect, and the rest of these guys are the guys that we, you know,
geeks.
They're around and everything, but we feed them to our big stars. And it's one of the reasons why when we've talked about these Raw quarter hours where, you know, you get John Cena and CM Punk and Triple H, and their quarter hours are doing just fine. And then you put, like, John Morrison out there, or even, you know, even with Alberto Del Rio, you know, and you put those guys out there and click, 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 and that thing that Punk said last week, you know, the people turn off the sets. And that's why the, you know, the ratings averages have been, for the most part, the last several weeks, very low because, you know, people know that, you know, they're you know, the odds, you know, yeah, okay, with Punk to a degree, this year, they, you know, or in the last since June, they have allowed him to be elevated, and they protected him pretty well. But for the most part, they're not very good at doing this. Like they'll push people, but you still, you know, the key people are still the same people, and no one really gets to that level for the most part. I mean, I think Miz was pretty close, you know, and they gave Miz a big push. Although now he's, you know, now he's not quite there right now. But yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, but you do need your superstars and you know the draw. But I think that one of the things, especially since they are unopposed, you know, it's some of these things that they've fallen into the mistake of, is there's nothing wrong with Cena beating people, but that you probably should have, like, on that undercard, you know, maybe 5 guys that you're also protecting, and that, you know, your rule of thumb is that we're not beating these 5 guys on television, and we're going to get them up to the top level. And they don't have that. So no one ever gets up to that top level other than the guys that are already at that top level, and then it makes it the feeling that it's stale because you go like, oh, we've seen Cena do this a million times. If Cena did this a couple of times a year, you know, it'd be fine because other guys, because you win the show with other guys, but they're so intent on, you know, they have to end with either Cena or Punk is what it's probably going to be, or Randy Orton. And on Raw, I'm not even sure. We'll see how much they even allow Randy Orton to end it because he's kind of like the SmackDown ender. Yeah, you're going to have the feeling of everything being the same. And I don't know that it's a good idea. You know, the more I think about it, in theory, adding the SmackDown guys on Raw in theory, is a good idea because you're going against football. You need all hands on deck. You don't have a lot of stars right now.
We're only bringing one star
is because of the booking.
Yeah, but there's only one guy that's coming over that anybody sees as a star. This all hands on deck. Wow, we're bringing over Jack Swagger, who nobody cares about.
Well, Jack Swagger was already on that side.
On Raw? I could have sworn he was a SmackDown guy. Oh, you're right. He was.
No. They brought over Christian and Sheamus, and they haven't brought over Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase yet. But that's probably just because they had to do the second half of the show and probably missed the flight to come in. So, you know, all the guys that were on this one, like Jinder Mahal and Kali and all them, they were all the ones who got out of Paris early and flew in.
We'll get into this thing here in a second. Let's open up the show here. The first segment was Punk coming out. And Triple H, actually, the thing about this, I was kind of like annoyed right off the bat. Punk comes out to Cult of Personality. I could have sworn that on SmackDown, they made a big deal about the fact that Hunter was such a nice guy that he paid for this music for CM Punk. He was the guy that paid for this. He went out of his way to make sure that this song was paid for CM Punk. Then they have the whole deal, and they get in a fight, and they talk about how now it's personal, and Hunter really hates Punk. Why is he still paying for the music?
He probably, it's like one of those leases. You know, you bought it for a year, so it's like...
May as well get his money's worth?
Yeah, kind of like that no-cut contract. But, you know, here's the other thing. It's like, why is... This is... Oh, God. Don't get me started, Kevin Nash.
Let's get going here
Nash. And this is not Kevin Nash's fault. I mean, this is the booking of Kevin Nash, not Kevin Nash himself. But what week... Wasn't it last week or was it the week before... Where I think it was last week, where he got announced he was signed to a contract, and I don't care if you fire me because I'm getting paid either way. So now this week he fires him and he's all upset. And it's like he made it clear he doesn't care because he's getting paid either way.
Well, he was upset because his best friend of 20 years fired him.
But he said this a week ago that he didn't care.
Well, he did say he wouldn't care.
Paid. And that Kevin, this is like the freaking Tracy Brooks thing on...
Well, it's all going to end up there in cahoots together, so it's all going to, I mean, obviously.
Yeah, okay. But the thing is, if it does, then why is Punk telling us already?
That is a good question. Well, you want to know why? I'll tell you why. Well, let's talk about this segment, then I'll tell you. I'll explain this segment to everybody. So Nash comes out, and Punk is there, and Triple H is there, and they're all bitching back and forth that they've been doing for a long time here. Punk's talking about how old Nash is, and
hasn't been relevant since 1994, and he wasn't even old enough to drive in 1994.
Yeah, Nash talking about
what was he? 13 then?
Something about that, yeah.
Roughly, I think. Yeah, 13, 14.
Nash is talking about how small he is, and the universe isn't big enough for the two of us. He said the universe is not big enough for the two of us. So Hunter comes out, and they finally reveal who sent the mystery text message. And the answer is Kevin Nash sent it to Kevin Nash.
Yeah. Boy, was that terrible.
What a letdown this was. And Hunter's...
I mean, we're sitting here all thinking of what you can do and, like, how long you can drag this thing out. And now they just got rid of it.
Total throwaway deal in the angle here.
Oh, I mean, boy,
So Hunter's mad that Nash lied. Hunter says, well, you don't think the place is big enough for the two of you? Well, Punk never lied to me, so hate to have to do this. And Nash is all appalled that his buddy's going to fire him, and he starts pushing him around and saying, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? So Hunter punches Kevin Nash. Nash falls down. Hunter fires him. Punk laughs at Hunter. And off they go. Anyway, the point I was going to make earlier was the reason that Punk has already revealed that this has to be they're in cahoots is because when this was over, before Punk had said that, when he was just laughing at Kevin Nash, I mean, to me it was like, it's so obvious that these two guys are, Nash and Hunter are in cahoots, that Punk laughing at them, he looks like he's going to be an idiot babyface here. So I guess Punk is just jumping the gun so that when he is an idiot babyface, he can let us all know that he knew this was coming the whole time.
Then that makes him an even dumber idiot. No, I don't know. I mean, I think they'll probably build to like a three-way match or something when Nash is finally physically cleared to wrestle.
Well, if Punk's so smart, why didn't he bring up when they announced no DQ that, oh, well, Nash is going to run in now? That's the problem with this storyline.
Actually, you know, well, not now, you know, you're right about that.
Yeah, one of the problems with this storyline is they're trying to portray Punk as this guy that's like, he's too smart for everything, he's too cool and that sort of deal. But there are certain parts of the storyline where, as a babyface, I mean, he's like, they've booked themselves into a corner. You know, Punk has to know. If this ends up being a swerve, Punk has to know. You know what I mean? Otherwise, he's an idiot babyface. So you know, now he's kind of got to talk about how, oh, well, I know you guys are still in cahoots. So then they are in cahoots, and he doesn't look so stupid. But at the same time, it's like, well, you know, it's not much of a surprise then, since, I don't know. It's just a weird situation here. They're walking this weird line.
Well, to me, when they did the stip, you know, because the deal is now it's a no DQ match, and if Punk wins, Triple H has to step down as COO. And it's like,
straight at Impact.
You know, it's like, here's the thing. It's like, I'm listening to this, and I'm thinking when they're doing this whole big talk that, you know, Triple H is going to do the stip, I'm thinking, oh my God, they're going to do a freaking last man standing match in his first match since April, when his first match should be good enough. It's like, you know, let's burn through this thing even quicker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you don't need a stip. You certainly don't need a stip where he puts a COO title on the line when he's only been COO for a couple weeks anyway, and it doesn't mean anything. I mean, to make that thing mean something, that's got to be an established thing that changes where you have months of the thing, or else it doesn't mean shit. Plus, you're already in this period of doesn't mean shit because you did the thing with Cena, you know, and the firing and all that on the July pay-per-view, and he never got fired. And now we're already in the September pay-per-view, and we're already doing it again when we've already taught everyone that every single step we do, we lie about. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, I think the buildup for Punk and Triple H is good. I think that they're going to do a nice B show buy rate better than, you know, I think it'll be up from last year. I think, you know, I think it's going to be comparatively, it won't do more buys than SummerSlam, obviously, because it's not SummerSlam, but I think it will be more of a success than SummerSlam was. I like the build-up for this match, but why do they need to add to it? Because, number one, it ain't going to add anything. When adding Cena being fired, it almost does this thing like, okay, now you're slapping me in the face. Cause anyone with a memory, and it's like, now, you know, you're turning it into, like you said, like into Impact, where it's just like, okay, I know that you're full of shit here, so that's like, it's like that, it's like, it becomes a mental turnoff.
You know they're full of shit, and they're starting with a stipulation match.
And they don't need to.
No, not at all.
The stipulation match is because the match itself has already been done, and you know you need something stronger to draw people. This match, the first match, if they don't got confidence that Triple H and Punk, after the promos that those guys have done, is strong enough without stips on pay-per-view for the first match, then they got no confidence in, and I don't know what they do, because then what do you do next? I mean, where do you go after this?
Well, Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, but if you've already done no DQ and his job on the line, Hell in a Cell really isn't elevating it much.
This was announced, by the way, later in the show, everybody. In the middle of the show, after Punk's match with R-Truth, Hunter just randomly came out again and announced that he was very mad. And they were changing the match at Night of Champions. It's now Triple H versus Punk in a no disqualification match, which Punk never bothered to note. That means Kevin Nash can run in now, since you guys are best friends. But they're putting that in.
But he's fired. Kevin Nash is now fired.
Well, sure, but he can come back. So if Hunter wins, he has to. Well, if Hunter wins, what do we have here? If Punk wins, Hunter has to resign as COO. And let's see. If Hunter wins, what does Hunter get?
If Hunter wins, nothing happens.
Oh, that, what a stupid...
I mean, Punk doesn't have to lose his job or anything.
So Hunter okayed that? Hunter didn't have a stip of his own? Anyway, doesn't matter. They're rushing through this entire thing here. And you know, the other thing about that second part there where they announced a match is when Hunter announces it's a no DQ match, you know, this big, dangerous, no disqualification match, Punk grabs the mic and says, yeah, well, you've been hitting people in the face with a sledgehammer for the past 10 years, and no one's been killed, so I'm not scared. It's like, well, why do no DQ then? So Punk doesn't care. Punk's not worried. So what are we paying for here? You just killed the guy's gimmick.
Well, no, I mean, it's going to be this big brawl. That's the idea.
Yeah, but
and he's not, and he's Punk's a babyface. He doesn't have to be afraid. If he was a heel, and he did that, I would go like, and I know some people he is the heel, but if he was a heel and did that, I would go like, this is really bad. But he's a babyface.
You really so got to bury Hunter's
babyface shouldn't be scared.
Yeah, but you got to bury his sledgehammer gimmick and never hurt anybody after 10 years.
No, he never killed anybody.
Oh, well, yeah. I see.
And I guess he's not afraid of being hurt.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, he's never killed anyone.
Thank God
he's never killed anyone.
There was a woman that hated Punk on the show, by the way. This woman just screeching in the front row about how he sucked. And she screeched and screeched, and it was infuriating. We had Nash leaving with John Laurinaitis, zoomed out of the building, so there's more to come, obviously. We had Kofi and Evan Bourne against Jinder Mahal and the Great Khali. It was a real match. Oh, my God. First off, Air Boom is the worst name for a tag team of all time. And they had a bad
Even
match.
Even more than Strikeforce?
Oh, yeah. Way worse. Way worse than Strikeforce. Strikeforce
you,
at least
you
became...
remember when they... We're going to strike with force? Strikeforce. That was one of the lamest segments I can ever remember.
At least it became an MMA company in the end.
Air yeah,
Boom. There's never going to be an Air Boom. You'll never hear Air Boom again in the history of the world after this team is done.
And knowing them, it's not going to be that all that long.
No. So they had a bad match. Khali's horrible. He sucked Jinder Mahal down into an abyss of...
Well, Jinder Mahal's not so good anyway.
No.
He's pretty green. The you know, Kofi Kingston and Evan Bourne are you know, they... Like, this is probably the wrong night to say this, but I think that they can be, like, a really good team. The thing is when they come down the aisle, okay, when Evan Bourne was coming down the aisle, it was like he's doing this fake Rock and Roll Express, jumping up and down, you know, Rick Martel babyface thing that I guess maybe because either he never did it. I don't know what it is, but when I'm watching it, I'm going like, you're playing, you know, babyface tag team rockers guy, and it's so fake looking. But in the ring, I like these guys. I think that, you know they're both really good, and they both work really hard. You know, they're certainly, you know, not lazy, and they're both talented. But, you know, there's limitations, and Great Khali and Jinder Mahal will test the best of them. And they tested the best of them tonight.
I know that this is a bad example here because Khali and Jinder suck. But we're just talking last week about how SmackDown house shows aren't doing all that well. So they've got this wacky backwards idea of here's how we'll get SmackDown over. We'll take the SmackDown guys and put them on Raw. Not take the Raw guys and put them on SmackDown. The SmackDown guys are going to come to Raw. Okay, if you're going to do that, you can't bring these SmackDown guys to Raw and beat them.
Absolutely. You're so right. I mean, and that's I knew that was going to happen as soon as I saw this plan. I go, at the end of the day, with the exception of Randy Orton, they're going to make all these guys into prelim guys. So, like, this idea that, but, you know, like, it's like that whole thing. Like, they have this mentality that if you beat a guy with a top guy, okay, like just this is not an example.
I was going to say, you're already off the rails here with this example.
What?
You're already off the rails with this example here, based on the match we're talking about.
The thing is that they had that, and we've seen it many times where, you know, you're talking to, you know, so-and-so. Let's just say, like, John Cena wrestles Jack Swagger as a match, and John Cena just beats him clean. And you go, like, you know, okay, it's just whatever. Are you interested in pushing Jack Swagger? Oh, yeah, we're really interested. Then why'd you beat him? Well, he got the rub because he got in the ring with the main eventer, and it's like, it doesn't work that way. If you know, if he goes in there and he, you know, holds his own and doesn't lose, you know, and you know, goes to a double DQ or whatever it is, you know, it's one thing. But if you go in there and you know, it's like there was his history of wrestling, you know, one of those funny things that we sometimes talk about. And they used to, you know, they you know, television matches used to have one guy would beat the other guy, right? All the time. And the other guy, the guy who lost and lost and lost and lost, they're generally like professional job guys, they would be in there with the biggest stars in the business, and they never got the rub, and they never became bigger stars because they got beaten by these guys, you know, the way like John Cena. And those matches were exactly like John Cena and Wade Barrett on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, and Wade Barrett's, again, you know, one of these guys who, you know, they think should be their future, and God damn it, you know, it's like we gave him every chance, and he just didn't get over, and it's just like, ugh. What are you going to do?
We had Beth versus Eve in a, I believe, a number one contenders match.
Yes.
Yep. Kelly was champion there doing commentary. And then they brought
Natalia too.
Yep, brought down Natalia to do commentary. They actually had a decent argument back and forth.
Better than the match.
This match. Yeah, there were some problems with this match. And Eve, they tried a monkey flip spot, didn't work. And then they mistimed the bitch clamp or whatever the deal is called, Beth's finish. And Beth won. It's Beth versus Kelly at the pay-per-view. Heels beat up the babyfaces afterwards. And there you go.
Yeah. You know, if they're going to have people do physical stuff, they really shouldn't have them do it in high heels because it looks really, you know. I mean, these women,
yeah.
It's tough enough for these women anyway. You know, I mean, hey, let's face it. You put John Cena in those high heels, he couldn't work either. Okay, so it's not a women's
thing. He can't work in flat shoes.
Better than most of the women.
Well,
better than almost all the women.
That's true.
Okay. But the thing is, like the women, for the most part, are so-so at best, and some of them are not even so-so on this roster. And then you make them try to do something physical in high heels where they can barely walk. And I mean, like, Natalia, I don't know how often she wears high heels, but the way she was walking in them, she's looked so unbelievably uncomfortable. And it's like, okay, if she's going to walk out there and she's got to walk there and they want her to look really pretty and all that, that's fine, that's cool. But then when her and Kelly had to go out and do that physical stuff, it was just so, they're so careful and it's so fake. And it's like, you know, just have them wear shoes they can maneuver in.
Or take them off before the brawl begins.
Yeah. And women, I mean, I've seen women do that a lot. You know, like I think Gail Kim used to do that, which is really smart. Yeah, they should just take them off. You're right. They didn't think about that though.
Drew McIntyre was actually on Raw. He was talking
to Kurt Hawkins.
That's true. He's talking to Christian. Alberto walked up, tried to recruit Christian to beat up Cena later on, and Christian wanted none of it. But Alberto started to. You know, he was like, Cena gave you an AA last week on the show, and the next night you had to face Orton and you lost, so why don't you take your frustrations out on Cena?
And I thought he said that stupid booking actually made sense a week later, right?
I thought he should take his frustrations out on whoever booked him to lose to the AA the night before that match right there. Truth and Miz came out and cut a promo. As awesome as these two guys were the last time they did this, they were the exact opposite this time. I hated this. Just a bunch of stupid comedy and just the polar opposite of their first one. They're getting a tag title shot at the pay-per-view, despite the fact that I don't think they've had a single match together on television. And on top of that, they did Punk versus Truth here. Punk beat him clean. So that is how you get a tag team title
shot. Punk's the guy they're protecting. Punk's in the pay-per-view main event. They're in the tag team match.
So why would you announce that Truth and Miz are getting a tag team title shot and then have Truth lose? Yeah, there's no one else that CM Punk could have beaten on this show?
I think in their mind, they couldn't come up with anyone. Or maybe they thought that it was giving R-Truth the rub to get beat by Punk.
Sure, yeah. That makes...
Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as like the deal with that promo, it felt too like a comedy routine.
They tried to be wacky, and then the announcers had to laugh. Well, mostly Cole. It just didn't work at all.
It was too scripted fake.
Yes. Yes.
I will say this. I think that Miz in that suit, you know.
That was a special suit.
Yeah, he was wearing this plaid suit. But the thing is like, I liked it because he stood out in a crowd.
I'll say.
You know, I mean, it's like, I just think that, like, that you shouldn't blend in and look like everybody else. And he went out there. But now there was the other thing, you know. So, I mean, when he's walking out in that suit, it reminded me of, like, when, you know, Ric Flair was young and he'd have these suits that you would never see anyone wear. You know what I'm thinking? Like, man, you know, like, there's some things that he does that remind me of a young Ric Flair. Not inside the ring, but just some of the ways he handles himself like a star, like when he's doing promos and things like that I really like in Miz. But there was something, man. I don't know. You know, I mean, I know he works his ass off on many different things between acting classes and language classes when we're going overseas and, all the media work that he does early in the morning, making all those calls. My God, his eyes, I couldn't even believe how bad they looked. I mean, he looked like somebody had punched him in both eyes, and they hadn't, just because he looked like he hadn't slept in like 10 days.
Yeah.
I mean,
May not have.
What?
May not have.
I know, but it looked, you know. I mean, it was bad enough to where when I saw it, it was like I was almost taken aback of, oh, my God, what the fuck happened to his eyes? I mean, they looked really, on the faraway shots that were okay. I mean, you could see the big bags under his eyes, and sometimes you even see that. You see that with Punk a lot, too. But on the close-up shots, it was like the raccoon eyes. I mean, it was like way more than bags. They looked horrible. I mean, I don't know what he did, but, oh, my God. It was almost like, I wouldn't even want him on TV like that, but, you know, because again, they, or if you do and you notice it, don't do close-ups. But I don't know, people, you know, a lot of people probably didn't notice it, but you look, watch back on the tape when you see the close-ups of his eyes. Oh, my God, I don't know what, he looked bad.
So then they had the match here, and as noted, Punk just beat Truth. This, oh, my God, Michael Cole was back with a vengeance here. And
Vince was way in his ear tonight, I heard.
Oh, my God, I wanted to shut this show off. I was just infuriated. Like, I'm trying so hard to just watch a wrestling match, and I just have this guy screeching in my ear about God knows what. You know, yelling, just going nuts on Jim Ross. And
the Jezebel line, and from Natalia attacked Kelly.
Oh, God. Yeah, this absolutely sucked. And anyway... As noted.
Thank God he didn't say anything about the Hatfields and McCoys.
Oh, man. Truth lost, and now he gets a tag title shot. And then we had the Punk deal with Hunter announcing
the... Well, I wouldn't tell you that tag title doesn't mean anything anyway.
Yeah. Wade Barrett met with two men who I believe were Tyler Rex and Curt Hawkins, but it's Impact, so they didn't identify either man. And,
well, they did. I think they called one guy Tyler. And the other one, there was a reference to Curt Hawkins in there somewhere.
I believe Alberto had mentioned Hawkins.
Okay, there you go. So it's like, if you paid attention, like you did know who they were, if you, you know, actually knew that there was a Tyler Rex and a Curt Hawkins, if you were someone who didn't know, and, you know, I mean, Curt Hawkins has been on TV months and months ago, but if you're someone like, you know, I mean, when was the last time he saw the light of day on Raw?
Good Lord. A long time.
Maybe never, because he was always on SmackDown, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler Rex, guy, I can't even remember. You know, who would even remember him? I mean, he got a push for like a week and maybe was in Survivor Series last year and actually had some time and then got just like fell off the face of the earth.
So Alberto tried to recruit Wade into taking out Cena. We had McGillicuddy and David Otunga against Jerry Lawler and the newest Raw sensation, Zack Ryder, who they gave a 2-minute video package to. Clips from his online show, that's him being wacky. Pretty astonishing, actually. They even plugged his internet championship. So, after the big video package and the re-debut, the very first thing that happened was he goes to lock up and gets kneed in the gut, and the heels beat on him the entire time. Finally,
yeah, but he got the win.
Well, he did. He finally made the tag to Lawler after selling and selling and selling and selling. Lawler has the match won. Zach demands a tag, and then he goes in there and hits his Rough Rider for the pin. So it's like the best and worst they could do for a guy in this particular match.
I mean, it was fine. I mean, you know, again, how long before they lose interest in him? We'll find out.
I
mean,
I thought the lockup. Personally,
yeah, you know. For what it was, I thought that this was good, and it was a good way to introduce him, because if it was Zack Ryder and anyone but Jerry Lawler, nobody would have cared, especially with Otunga and McGillicuddy.
Yeah, but listen, if you're gonna debut the guy and give him a new push and that sort of thing, you know, at least he could have run wild for 10 seconds before the heels cut him off. You know, give him something in this match aside from after Lawler had the match won.
Well, they were rushing. I mean, what did they give them? 2 minutes?
Don't bother then, in my opinion.
Where do we have the time on this? What do you want? They keep the whole thing was 2 minutes and 6 seconds. It wasn't like there's time for him to get 90 seconds of offense and then without, you know what I mean? There was no time.
Yeah, but it is McGillicuddy and David Otunga, and you're trying to debut a new star, so just have him squash those two guys. Who cares?
Well, they wanted him to pay his dues.
That's what we need for these new stars on Raw. Pay your dues first.
Hey, look, it was. You know what? They could have given him the 5-minute match and taken away the video, and it wouldn't have been. It's better they gave him the video and took it away from the match. I think because the video, they showed his personality, it's fine. Again, like, are they going to keep this up? You know, it's like, if this was another year, I would go, this was, like, really good, you know, and I'd have some hope. But knowing the way that they do these things and then 2 weeks later they just lose interest, it's like, to me, it's like, you know, I mean, it was good for the week, but I know it's going nowhere type of, that's kind of like my attitude with it right now. But hopefully, you know, hopefully that they decide to do something with the guy.
Alberto tried to talk Dolph into taking out Cena. We had a deal where the Bellas walked up, and I guess they're going to have a three-way with Alberto. That's certainly what they...
Or maybe it may be with Ricardo when it's a four-way.
I was going to say Ricardo could be sitting there at a desk watching.
That's possible, too. Or he could be calling the moves.
That also. That's also a possibility.
Yeah. You know the one thing when Alberto did the entrance of Del Rio... A little later, you know, just a few minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
They need to play that music when he's doing it because it lost something without the music.
It's not the same without the music. That is absolutely true.
I mean, it was so, you know, like I'm listening to him going, like, this isn't as cool as usual. And I'm like, oh, they're not playing the music. I mean, he's doing the exact same thing he always does. And he's doing, you know, it's him and that music. It's just like, because, I don't know, it's just like that whole deal is just so tremendous.
It multiplies it exponentially when the music is playing.
Yeah, and the car.
And the cars, yes.
Yeah.
It is Labor Day, so of course we had Heath Slater, your SmackDown superstar, coming out and getting beaten in a squash match by Randy Orton. So there you go.
Yeah, but Heath Slater, you know what? That's fine, because Heath Slater's going nowhere. Maybe Heath Slater should have been the one that Punk beat, too.
That'd be a good idea.
You know, that way you don't have to beat Truth, but then, you know, people would, whatever. But, yeah, you know, I mean, this was, you know, when I watched him come down, I was like, nah, I just don't see it in him.
So then the main event segment was Cena coming out and calling out Alberto, and Alberto came out and said, the reason I'm not ducking you, reason I wasn't here last week is I was trying to protect you. I don't want you to end up like Rey Mysterio, who's going to be out for a long time with a terrible injury. And he said he wasn't going to do anything to him tonight, but he couldn't say the same for his friends. And out came Wade Barrett, Dolph Ziggler, Christian, and Jack Swagger. They beat on Cena. And then Alex Riley, Sheamus, and John Morrison ran down to make the save. Teddy Long came out and announced the 8-man elimination match. And they actually gave some SmackDown guys some wins here. Actually, no. I guess not. Swagger's on Raw. Why do I keep thinking he's a SmackDown guy? I guess it's because I had to watch that.
They protected Christian and Sheamus, though.
They did. They had a count out. They were taken away.
Sheamus is getting whiter, isn't he?
I don't know, but he's getting more over. He was over as a babyface in this
match. Yeah, he just looks so white, like almost...
translucent?
Something like that.
See-through? So yeah, they
No, I couldn't see like his internal organs or nothing like that.
Oh, well, that's too bad. They got counted out, and the rest of it came down to dudes getting eliminated, two of them in a row by Swagger, because they're building up the storyline that Swagger, after being managed by Vicky for a week, they completely forgot about it the next week, and now he's trying to get a job, or get Vicky to manage him.
When did Vicky come out? Did Vicky come out after he... Cause didn't he win True Falls before Vicky even showed up?
She came out after Morrison got eliminated.
Okay, so he beat one guy.
Beat one guy, yeah. So he beat two guys to build up
Morrison,
that deal.
Ziggler put the sleeper on Morrison, and then he like blind tagged in and put the ankle lock. So it was almost like he stole the win when he tapped out Morrison. And then he did tap out Alex Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went from there.
Bunch of eliminations came down to Swagger and Ziggler against Cena. They beat on him for a while. He made his own comeback. He did a 10-knuckle shuffle, which looked completely ridiculous. And Swagger cut him off, and he was about to go for the kill when Ziggler did a blind tag. Swagger was pissed. Ziggler, of course, immediately pinned. And then Swagger put Cena in the ankle lock, but of course, it's John Cena. He's not submitting to Jack Swagger. He does a switch. He taps out Jack Swagger. Cena stands tall. And then Alberto hits the ring to lay out John Cena, since, of course, they're fighting for the title of the pay-per-view. And John Cena lays him out as well. So... John Cena ends the show standing tall, and that's Raw, everybody. There you go.
Yeah.
Amazing how that works.
Mm-hmm.
So SmackDown, I guess, is being taped tomorrow, and there is no Impact taping. That's going to be the Friday show with the return of Jeff Hardy, who is going to court that morning.
Thursday show,
yeah. So that should be interesting. And yeah, that's the lineup for the next couple of days. So we're going to wrap it up for here. We're out of time. We got a new back issue of The Observer coming up tomorrow. We've got a new figure for an Observer coming up in the next couple of days. Got a bunch of shows, including Mick Foley coming up on Wednesday.
Thursday.
We've got a normal show Wednesday night, everybody. We'll have a bonus show on Thursday. So check all that out. We'll talk to you again after a while.